BBC One. Now, an extra program, Pie in the Sky.
I saw this pretty girl, or what they call a thing, you know, in the, exactly like a railway carriage, you know, litter. It started up overhead there, and I saw it and watched it right out of sight, right over the hill. But I looked in that direction, there was a silver plane, and a pink one, like a, between a pink and a red, cerise colour then. Right side by side, and they were in that direction, and there was no time, but I don't know where it went to.
I heard this noise, a hell of a noise it was. Came down, you know, it was a bit misty, funky, and, it was like as if a tin can was floating nuts and bolts, you know, and somebody was rattling it.
What I did see was a green, shimmering light for about quarter of an hour.
Well, it's hard to explain. It's like a bright light with a red light in the middle.
Cigar shape, glowing at each end.
I saw something over there between those two bungalows, and to me, it looked as if it was about 500 feet high. No higher. It seemed to be hovering.
It resembled something like a comet, but comets are white, so this one was orange, oval colour, so it certainly wasn't a comet.
There very well might be something in the stratosphere. I mean, we're sending spaceships to other planets, and I can't see any reason why, if there is life on another planet, they shouldn't be sending craft to us.
Obviously, these things, whatever they are infinitely maneuverable, and they're certainly beyond our ability to catch. We can't put salt on their tails or where. Tell me what you saw.
Just as obvious in the sky.
What did it look like?
Like a saucer.
Yes. And were there any lights or anything?
No, it was just the one object of the star. We were busy in here, but we had to come back in. But the three soldiers that were there with us, they all saw it. And they described it more or less like a lampshade. Although I've seen it, it hasn't convinced me. I still don't think there's anything in it itself.
I think it's just a load of crap. That's all. A white object, like a saucer. A bright light with a red light in the middle. A lampshade, a railway carriage, or just a load of tripe. That's how people in and around Warminster in Wiltshire have been describing the strange sights and sounds that have been a feature of local life for quite a while now, reaching something of a peak during the summer and autumn of 1965. Warminster's a thriving market town on the edge of Salisbury Plain, a shopping centre and a stopping-off point for motorists on their way west. Odd things have clearly been happening here, and there's been plenty of disagreement about the explanation of them. We asked the evaluation officer of the British Unidentified Flying Object Research Association, Dr. Cleary Baker, to comment on what's been going on.
I'm satisfied that we have evidence of something very strange going on in the world. I don't claim, I think it would be quite false to claim, that such evidence as we can bring forward is sufficient to establish a cast-iron, watertight case. Nevertheless, things are being seen in the skies, which, to all appearances, are flying machines of a very advanced technology. A technology advanced beyond our own. These are being seen over all of the countries of the world. And in many indirect ways, too, there is indication that something is going on which is beyond the province of the normal kind of activities which happen in the sky.
But why should they happen particularly in Warminster? The Warminster journalist, Mr. Harper Shuttlewood, have some interesting theories about this.
Well, I think that there could be several reasons, obviously. One, I think, is because it has, according to all the archaeologists and the UFO researchers who've been sort of plaguing us, you know, since it began, it has 11 leys. That's L-E-Y-S. And apparently, they're an archaeological term meaning prehistoric points of various types. For example, you must have a natural fountainhead or water supply, a spring. You must have a certain radius of the consecrated one, consecrated burial ground, and of course we have the tumuli and all the earth fires around here. And you must have a place of religious worship, a church or some sort of worship. And we find that we have 11, which according to all the experts, so I gather, is unique in this world. In other words, it's a billion to one chance.
One can't afford to be dogmatic in this or in any other matter connected with the unidentified flying objects. It's very hard, really, to see why the prehistoric monuments of a rather primitive phase of our history should be associated with what would appear to be visitations by alien intelligence, probably from outer space.
As a journalist, I prefer fact, obviously, and I think that the reason is simply that these humanoids from outer space, I think that they've been appearing sporadically in little places all over the world. I think they're concentrated here. Let's give one town a real aerial battering, or a haunting, if you like, for a whole 14 months, as they've done here. And we'll see what the reaction is then, because if we concentrate on one particular place for that length of time, the whole world is bound to get to know.
The whole world may be, but quite a number of the citizens of Warminster certainly. There's no shortage of people who've seen peculiar sights and heard peculiar sounds. Mrs. Hibbs got the most vivid recollections.
I was woke up really out of the swat sleep I had by this noise. First of all, it was like hail. And then it got nearer onto the roof, and it was like a lot of cats scratching. Oh, like an aerial scratching about, you know, up there. And then I thought to myself, well, what on earth is that? I lay in bed for quite a while, and I got quite hot. I got panicky, you know. So I did venture, and I paid the bed. And I looked out of the window, and there wasn't a drop of rain. It was all dry. Everything was as dry as a bone. But after that went over, I heard a whimpering noise, and like something going, that was the noise it was. And I thought, whatever is it? And I sat on the side of the bed, of course, Jean's hanging there, and she said, whatever it is. I said, do you hear that noise? She said, no, nothing, don't wake me up. She went to sleep again. So the dog downstairs, she didn't bark, but she was making that whooping noise, you know, woof like they do. And afterwards, when I turned over on my side and I got into bed, it looked as though there was a light, like the curtain of a moon. I don't know anything passed over then, but there was no planes, nothing at all in sight.
Mr. and Mrs. Payne saw the thing late one night when they were returning to Warminster on Mr. Payne's motorbike just before they were married.
Well, we saw these massive sort of discs appear from a clump of trees, and I said to my boyfriend then, good heavens, what on earth is that? And of course the bike had broken down, you see, and he said, well, I haven't no idea. So we stood there looking at it, and it bigger and bigger, and came towards us. It absolutely strapped down. We didn't know what it was.
A few miles outside Warminster is the Elizabethan mansion of Longleat. Nigel Mingay, the son of Lord Wainus Butler, describes the thing as it came his way.
Well, I was out one night, and a friend who I know, who lives just across the road, he said he'd seen it. I didn't believe him, but he told me to come out, so I went out with him, and we walked around for about half an hour, and then we were sort of looking around the sky the whole time, hoping to see it. We were just on the verge of coming in when we saw it, and it went right across the horizon.
Yes, where did it go exactly?
Well, if I can show you just out here, it appeared from behind this tree and went right over the sky and disappeared just before it got to that tree.
And what did you feel like when you saw it?
Well, I was surprised, not shocked, but I always had an open mind about it. But now I believe in it.
How many other Warminster people believe in it? Or perhaps we ought to say, how many Warminster people are willing to confess that they believe in it? So far as we can judge, there seem to be believers, disbelievers, and don't know is in about equal proportions. And quite a number of people in each category appear to be more than a little worried about the whole business. How many of them openly discuss their doubts and anxieties? I asked the vicar of St. Denis, the Reverend John Freeman.
I think in their first place, the vast majority of people in Bournemouth have no interest whatsoever in this. And they do regard the people who are serious about it as a bit odd. Parents of the true people have claimed to see it, as far as I know. It is not a subject which anybody has really warmed up to with me. I think that is so far the case that people in the world, on the whole, regard this publicity as something which is a bit derogatory.
To the town.
To the town.
Last autumn, Mr. Emlyn Rees, who's chairman of the Warminster Council, arranged a public meeting to get at the facts. This is what drove him to do it.
Well, I felt there was a great deal of concern in the town. There was a lot of ridicule being banded around in the local newspaper, and I thought it would be a great idea to have a public meeting to clarify the whole situation and to find out if there was any truth in the fact that there were such things as unidentified flying objects.
And do you think the meeting did establish this?
No, I don't think it did at all. We had a very interesting meeting. It was quite a full house. We had some 500 or 700 people in. We had some eminent people from London, from the Association of Unidentified Flying Objects. They gave their views. We had the public, who gave their views as to what they had purported to have seen. We had a very good meeting, a little rowdy in places, but on the whole very good.
Do you think Warminster has done well out of this, either its shops or people in general?
Well, I think it has. We had a tremendous amount of publicity, and this must have done the tradesmen in the town some good, and a good job too, I think.
Do you think anybody had a vested interest in stirring this up in the first place?
Only the newspapers. They were short for a story during the month of August, and they thought this was a good news story, and they played it up to the utmost.
The story ricocheted around the world, for example, after the first big sighting of the aerial cigar, which was to the south there, and that was by the vicar and his family of Heytesbury, 17 young people at Warminster, the hospital physiotherapist, Miss Long, the Horlocks, who described two flaming red pokers, which is rather graphic, of course, but I could see what they meant. Having seen the thing myself now, I think I can see what they meant by that description.
Now, would you tell us exactly what you did see?
Well, I saw, this will always be indelible on my mind, because it was 3:42 p.m. on the last Tuesday, that's September the 28th, the last Tuesday in September, and I was going upstairs. We live in rather a high up flat over in Monumental Masons. They call us Death Row, incidentally, because we have the hospital, doctors, undertaker, and then we're the Monumental Masons next door. But apart from that macabre observation, I went upstairs and I was completing a story for a magazine which is coming out in April on a woman lion tamer who can also tame all sorts of jungle cats in the same cage, Mary Chipperfield, you've probably heard of. And I went up for my notes, but my attention was arrested by this huge cigar shape in the sky. Now, had I normally been walking underneath that, I'm sure it would have assumed the proportions of nothing but a dense white cloud. But from the angle of vision that I had from the top of our house, I could see a peculiar hump, a yellow or an amber burnished protrusion from the top. And I've never seen anything like this in all my life. And it was 9 months after this thing started. And I honestly don't think I've been conditioned to all that extent. Although I lived in the center or the vortex of this mystery, let's face it, it's a mystery. But I wasn't convinced, even in spite of the high caliber of witnesses, I wasn't convinced that this thing existed. But I saw this with my own eyes. I dashed straight away for camera. I got the camera lined up, and the setting was about 8. It's a beautiful, clear afternoon. Out of the window, this thing came along over Colloway Clump, which is over there, northwest, to southeast, gliding along a gentle giant in the sky.
I trained my camera on it, and I felt the camera jumping about in my hands. That was the first unusual aspect. It didn't frighten me, but I felt like sharp prickling needles down that side of the hand, the wrist, that side of the face, and my eye watered for 2 months afterwards on that side. That was the exposed side to this thing. Now that proved to me that whatever was on board, or whoever was on board, could see me, could see this apparatus of mine. It threw out some concentrated force field. I'm quite serious about this. Which deliberately, with a deliberate intent of gumming up the camera. And, of course, they succeeded because nothing developed from 25 feet of film except an 8-foot portion burnt right through. That's all I had on my camera.
If they were trying to make a major impact, yes, one would think they wanted all possible publicity. Why should they want, then, to gum up the camera?
Well, I think the reason that struck me at the time, my wristwatch incidentally stopped, I didn't notice that until afterwards. I don't think that they're so worried perhaps about photography, but if they're thousands of years advanced, over us, and they've learned perhaps thousands of years ago to outlaw war, and you notice that the heaviest sightings of these people on this earth are just preceding a world war or some nuclear experimentation, some danger threshold, shall we say. If that's the case, and they saw the camera there, was to prevent them, being at no more than half a mile up at that time, I'm sure, thinking automatically, here's one of those crazy Earthmen and he's got a gun on us. I think that it's a fear that they have that I might have opened up on them, you know, with a machine gun. For all they knew, I think that's why they jumped up.
But one photographer, Mr. Gordon Faulkner, had better luck. He managed to take a picture of a flying saucer that hit the British press in a big way and then went round the world. Mr. Faulkner, in fact, has done much to put Warminster on the flying saucer map. This is how he got his picture.
I had a camera with me. I was taking it down to my sister who wanted to borrow it. And, as I said, I just had the camera with me. And pure luck, I just handed it and took a picture.
The object was staying still all this time, was it? Or was it
No, it was moving.
But moving slowly?
It was moving fairly fast. I wouldn't know to say how fast, but I couldn't say how fast.
Now, some people have said that when they've tried to take a picture of one of these things, there's been some mysterious force or radiation that stopped the camera from working. Did you find this?
It didn't stop my camera from working.
Have you had people say that this picture is a fake?
Of course I have, yes. I mean,
what do you say to them when they say that?
They're entitled to their own opinion. I know it's not a fake. And it doesn't really bother me what other people think.
Some people, nonetheless, are distinctly bothered. Colonel Allen, for instance.
I think the whole thing's a lot of nonsense.
Why do you say that?
Well, to begin with, there isn't a single authenticated sighting by somebody who's, shall we say, qualified to give an impartial scientific assessment of the sighting.
Now, you believe, I think, that it's possible to fake photographs of these objects fairly easily. In fact, you've done it yourself.
Yes.
How have you done this?
Yes. Well, I had one colour film left on a reel, and so I produced this.
And this is exactly what?
Well, the flying object was actually drawn on a piece of paper and cut out in outline, and then photographed against a blue bath towel on the ground whilst I stood on a stepladder leaning against the wall of the house. And I moved the camera slightly as I took the photograph so as to blur the thing.
And what are the reactions of the believers to this photograph? Have you shown it to anyone?
Well, no, I've kept it fairly quiet because I had intended originally to bring it out whilst admitting it was a fake. Next time the thing blew up. I'm sure it will do. In fact, it is doing now.
This is your reserve weapon.
You could say that.
Do you think it's possible that some of the normal and accountable things that go on from the Army's point of view on soldier plane could be confused with these objects?
In some cases, yes. You do get the most extraordinary noises. And, of course, there's a lot of activity, quite a lot of it at night. When the courses are running, there's a large number of night operations.
I pull a blanket to bed on the head and think, damn the Army, I wish they'd shut up and go to sleep.
In bed or out, Miss Anderson had both feet right on the ground. She's no intention of being taken in by any talk of visitors from other planets.
Last summer, I got up one morning, looked out of my bedroom window, and we had got Army in green camouflage jackets with leaves in their steel helmets romping around the estate yard and the withy beds beyond. Poor those little green men, I suppose.
What do you think about this general mystique that's developed about these objects around here?
I think it's a pity that so many people are ready to make categorical statements about a thing that nobody has bothered to investigate. As far as I have been able to discover, there has been no coordinated observation, no scientific inquiry as to what's happening. Various individuals have seen various things and have immediately drawn their own conclusions.
Well, if there's anything going on in Brackett's kind of thing, I'd like to know what it is. There's any nice little man about up there, sort of from Venus, Mars, anywhere, have them come here by all means. I mean, we'd like to know them. And if it's giving people something to talk about, we'll bring trade to the town, they must go on with the whole thing.
We continue to watch it for a while, and then it started this very erratic movement again. I said, is it a star? And he said, no, it isn't. And then he believed, as well as me, that there was definitely something for them.
I believe in it because where those who haven't seen it don't believe it, those who have seen it must believe in it. It's as simple as that. Those who see, believe. Those who don't see, scoff.
I don't believe it at all. I think it's something that's it's not proved. I just don't believe they exist until they are actually proven. I was saying, you know, I mean, they can show photos, but I think there's something to explain it all.
But this is the fact, I have seen it. Well, I have seen it too. As a matter of fact, we're coming out of the plane one night. We were travelling rather fast. And yet they were taking some more. I said, stop.
Well, it appeared to be round to me. But my husband was driving rather fast, and he wouldn't stop to have a look at it.
And then when we got home, she explained to me this is the thing she had seen herself before, and she wanted me to stop to see it. But I myself have only seen the movement of it from terrific distance, terrific speed. That's all I can tell her. And I certainly believe it. Doesn't bother me. I'm a Christian. I don't care about it.
Have you seen anything else since?
Yes, I have seen it once. Oh, I think a few months later, as I was looking out from my back window, it was above the trees, and then it was swaying.
Did it look the same?
Yes, it did. It had the red light as well as the previous one.
What sort of shape did it have?
Well, it looked round. I should say, you can't really describe it.
Just between those two bungalows, over there, I saw this thing, and it was very bright white, but it was sort of stone-shaped, you know, like a sofa.
Mrs. Atwell, a pilot's wife, had a most moving experience, after which she'll never feel quite the same again.
The man spoke to me, droning noise. They were like sound waves. Never heard anything like it before. Never.
Loud.
Oh, terribly loud. That's why I can't understand why my neighbour didn't hear it. Because I'm not a light sleeper. I sleep soundly. Even my little boy was fast asleep. I went in to see him. I was too frightened really to think. I shall never forget it.
and I'd like to hear it again, just to see if my reaction would be the same. I have mentioned it to people before they've approached me on the subject, but then I stopped telling people because they laughed at me. You know, I thought, oh, what's the point? You know, they don't believe. You've got to see it to believe it. Have you seen it? I'm not a religious sort of person. I believe in God, but I'm not a religious sort of person. But I don't think I should be so ready to laugh at anyone who spoke about these spiritual things now as I have in the past.
And I think a lot of people, when I've recapped on their stories, they've had that same sensation that they feel better, perhaps not physically, but mentally and spiritually particularly, they want to achieve something for the benefit of mankind. I don't think I ever have, you know, but
would it be going,
that feeling that's inculcated in you by this experience, I think.
Would it be going too far to say that you feel you've had something like a religious experience?
Yes, I don't think that would be exaggerating. You do. You seem to have a new outlook, a new mental outlook on life, and you want to help people. This is most peculiar, perhaps, and it's almost incredible to you, no doubt. But I felt that sensation. I wanted to see it again, and I wanted to convince whoever was on board that we weren't antagonistic and that we wanted to warmly welcome them if they cared to land. And of course, they have landed. They have landed.
How much does this sort of thing worry people in Warminster? The church should know quite a lot about it.
Few people, firstly, have come to me, approached me, but not in any sense of worry. I have had one man who came to ask me what I thought of the thing, theologically. My answer to him was that whether or not the thing was a real thing, it did not seem immediately relevant to the end of the judgment. Rather, it had any religious significance.
Did you feel inclined to poo-poo what he was saying, or did you take it dead seriously?
I took it seriously in the sense that he himself was dead serious. And to that extent, I had respect for what he said. But this attitude is one which I find personally very difficult to cotton on to. Because I don't think that speaking theologically that God works in these ways.
Astronomer and country parson, the Reverend Inge, had until recently a parish near Salisbury Plain. He feels most of the happenings have a rational explanation.
It's puzzled me a lot as to why people just around about Warminster should have come forward in the way they have. I should say they're mostly people who have not lived there for a long time. It's rather like people going near London Airport for the first time. They're very worried by the tremendous noise of the jet engines. But people that have lived there all their lives just don't notice it now. One night my wife and I were driving across in the dark on these very open roads, you know. They often haven't got hedges or anything like that. They've just got banks and stuff. And suddenly coming from the direction of Lark Hill, we saw a sort of large red flame, and it seemed to be just sort of hedge-hopping and going up and down and from sideways, one side to the other, and suddenly it swerved towards us, and I put my foot on the accelerator, and my wife cried out, and it whistled overhead, and away it went, where, I don't know. But that's the sort of thing that if a guided missile does get out of touch with those who are supposed to be controlling it could happen. I suppose eventually it might come down the field and burn out, and anybody walking out at night and seeing it would wonder what on earth all this flame and smoke and noise was.
Mr. Inge told us how he deals with people who believe these things come from outer space.
Two ladies wrote to me from an address in Bristol, and they said they were walking on a hill, a high hill outside Warminster, and suddenly, without any warning, from a wood nearby, two of the strangest little flying machines they'd ever seen suddenly shot up into the air with terrific noise, flames and smoke, and they disappeared right up. Away they went over the horizon. And they were so astonished that they thought they must be seeing things. They didn't like to mention it. And they did take the trouble to sit down and write about this. And in that connection, I want to say what they saw, I'm sure, is what has already been shown on film, BBC, a film that came from the United States, of these one-man helicopters that are jet-propelled as well. You have a rope over your head, and the man has it strapped on his back. And I met another man later on, as I say just now, he actually saw one of these come down alongside his car, and he stopped, and he saw the man pull out a map, consult the map, see where he was, fold it up again, put it in his pocket, press the button, and away he went up in a sheet of flame. Now that would frighten the life out of anybody if they didn't know what it was, and the stories about men coming from outer space would be almost justified in that case if you didn't know what it was. So there is nothing to worry about. After all, none of these things has killed anybody yet, or as far as I know, injured them, except perhaps the brave people who have taken part in them, and you wouldn't hear very much about that.
But would you go so far as to encourage ordinary people to think these did come from outer space, so that the services could carry on with their experimenting behind this sort of smoke screen? Would you
know? No, not a bit. I wouldn't hear that. That would be deception, wouldn't it? I would simply say, look, you've seen something that perhaps you weren't supposed to see. I can assure you that there's no danger from it. And if you see it again, just remember that it's really in your own interest and in the interest of this country that these things are happening. Just go to sleep on it and don't worry about it. So I'm personally, my message to the people of Warminster is don't forget that you live on the edge of the perimeter of an experimental area where brave men are doing experiments in connection with all three of the forces.
Now, you very obviously don't believe in them. Why do you believe that some people seem to need to believe in them?
I don't say I don't believe in them. I say that there is not sufficient evidence available to know what one is believing or not believing in. There's too much woolly and hysterical speculation which has been given too much publicity by the press and radio and television.